I am extraordinarily proud of the flexibility of this congregation. Good Friday, we had intermittent power issues that led to some problems, and got it all fixed, it got rolling. Monday, we had what I thought was a transformer blowing out, but I've just learned was probably a large wire fuse. We have some just wealth of knowledge that gets dropped on me occasionally. That still sounds like an explosion and might make some people call the police because they're afraid of something. Not saying who, but that's okay. Then we had air conditioning issues, so much so that on Wednesday night, our poor, sweet people who were cooking dinner called me and said, "Look, it's like Haiti in here." I walked in. It was not far off, except we all had AC to go home to. So much that then we moved all a bunch of tables down here, only in time for the air conditioning to finally... Look, flexibility is a strong virtue, because it means that we're not so rigid that we break when we're confronted by the realities of life. Rigidity does not benefit the follower of Jesus. Wes came to me a few weeks ago and said, "I've got this kind of service laid on my heart." And Wes cares very deeply. He was one of the first people I talked to from this congregation. And our early conversations were about the mission impact that a church this size made on the world, which is we're boxing above our weight class, okay? And that's great. It's powerful. And it's also a perfect time to reflect on that right after Easter, because the Easter question, particularly in Luke's gospel, that gets asked is, why do you look for the living among the dead? Why are you here? Why are you doing what you're doing? And so I thought it was appropriate to not only dip into Matthew a little bit, but to look at where we've been this Lent. The last Sunday before we entered into Lent, we studied the Transfiguration, where Jesus goes up on the mountain, is transformed in front of the disciples in this moment of glory, where they get some glimpse of hope before he sets his face towards Jerusalem. And at some point during our sermon series in the middle of Lent, we talked about the Good Samaritan, who is this exemplar in how to handle the everyday mission opportunities we find in our midst. I do want to say one thing I thought was extraordinarily ironic that I didn't think of until today. I love the expressions some of y'all use. Y'all teach me all sorts of stuff. Early on, I was here, and I was in a meeting with Bryn, and somebody was doing something, and she said, and if you know Bryn, you've heard her say this, "I'm going to slap you naked and hide your clothes." So for her to do a children's moment about a man who was left naked on the side of the road, seemed appropriate. Living like your mom. It is this great question about what are we doing here? Well, we need to be here. We need to be here all the time because we need to come together to remember that there is a different story than the one we hear day in and day out in the world. There is a story that doesn't end with death and dismay and hopelessness. There is a story that is the very foundation of hope. And we have to come together to remember that story, because otherwise we get worn down. We come together to be invigorated and remember that story and then to go. See, Jesus, it wasn't when he just came out of the tomb. It's not like he had a new mission. It's not that Jesus was someone different. In fact, all of the gospel accounts talk about how Jesus, post-resurrection, wants everybody to understand he does not come out of the tomb guns blazing, ready to wreak havoc on the world. He comes out of the tomb wounded, with scars, and still ready to sit down and eat with those who betrayed him, so that they might understand that the message he'd been saying all along was still true, that God cares about you and more than you. It's not a zero-sum game where God only cares about me. God cares about me so deeply that it doesn't stop with me. And I don't get it if I let it stop with me. I titled the sermon "The Divine Shove" because I want to talk a tangential moment about folk theology. And by folk theology, I mean thinking about God that is not fully formed, but yet that we talk about all the time. Some of us believe that God is some divine ninja sneaking up behind us to push us down when we make mistakes, right? You know, I cussed at my brother, or I cussed in my mind at my brother. I cussed at my brother. You know who you are, me. And because of that, I've twisted my ankle, and I know what happened. I was angry, I cussed at my brother, and I was working in the garden, and I was sitting there, and the next thing you know, I heard, barely, because he's a ninja, divine, he came up behind me, and he shoved me down. God wanted me to know not to cuss at my brother. Hey, man. No, it's just not how it works. It's not how God works. I mean, part of the point of Jesus is that God's not into this retribution game anymore. But God does shove us. It's just not out of some petty right and wrong that we grasp. God has been shoving us from the beginning to go and get outside of ourselves. Every message we get in the world, 95% of them, from the time we are born in the Western world, says that you are special and you are a unique snowflake. And I know that now we like to use that term derogatorily about people who get their feelings hurt. Nobody who doesn't believe that. All of us have moments where we think that we are the most special person on earth. And we believe it in such a way that our specialness is directly proportional to the lack of specialness in other people. That I can only be special if you are not. We want to encapsulate and capture God inside of ourselves. But see, God doesn't just live here. In fact, it's not in the gospel we were in this year, but one of the great moments in the Easter story is this moment where Jesus is hanging on the cross, and as he dies, the temple curtain is torn in two. And one of the ways we can interpret that story is that all along, people had been told, God lives in this box inside this room behind the curtain. This is where God resides. And that some crazy person would come and say that God resided in him means we have to kill him. Because we know where God lives. And then Jesus died and the temple was torn. And you know what was behind it? Nothing. Because that's not where God lives. The same is true for us, by the way. As long as we think God is captured inside of who we are and what we do, then we are missing where God is really working. Jesus all along said, we got to keep going, we got to keep moving, and part of it's moving to Jerusalem, and part of it's moving beyond. But Jesus was always about going. When he comes up from the tomb, and Mary tries to hold on to him, when Mary tries to hold on to him, Jesus said, I'm going to slap you naked and hide your clothes. Let go of me, Mary. When Mary tries to do really what Peter did at the Transfiguration, tries to encapsulate this moment of grace and hold it in for herself, Jesus says, let go, I'm not done. It's not unkind, it's not unloving. Just like when Bryn tells me that, she doesn't mean it meanly, she just means get in line. Jesus is saying, look, you can't capture this right here because I'm already out there on the loose. Where have you seen God this week? That can be a really difficult question because we're all here in church and we all like to think that we saw God somewhere this week. But the minute you get asked that question, most of our initial response is anxiety. And then the number two response is nature. We ought to be able to answer that question. Where'd you see God this week? I'll tell you where I saw God this week, one of the places. I went to a talent show Friday night at a school that caters to kids who are atypical in many ways. Many of them have quite severe public performance issues that are based on some other issues they have. I watched this girl who I know gets so anxious that sometimes she has to miss school because there's a classmate's party. I watched her stand in front of a room full of people and sing a song perfectly. She was able to do that because she has received love from people around her that told her, succeed or fail, we're going to be here for you. So it wasn't a zero-sum game. They weren't going to love her just because she sang well. They were going to love her because she was worth love. And it enabled her, out of love, to get up and do something she thought she could not. I'm going to tell you where you could see God soon. Many of us will probably end up going up to Tarrant again, which is way up north if you ain't ever been there. I swear it's almost Tennessee. It's not, but it feels like it. Several of us for several years have been going. Wes used to coach there. Julie coaches there now. We've been going and doing this field day. It's not our kids. It's not our neighborhood. Let me tell you something I've seen over the past few years that's been remarkable. The first year we went, it was a lot of us. A lot of us coming in and pouring love into these kids. And there were a few parents. Last year, there were more parents than us. Because somehow pouring love into a system makes it grow and flourish. And so, it was beautiful because somehow God had used us showing up and making fun of kids playing tug-of-war. And some of them needed, no, I shouldn't say needed to be made fun of. Somebody said, I listened to your children's moment. I know I'm not supposed to make fun of people, even playing tug-of-war. Somehow showing up and being consistent and caring enabled that whole system, at least in the time I saw it, to have more love within it. I'm going to tell you another great opportunity. In July, on July 10th, you could go with some of us to Arkansas. It will be hotter than the kitchen. For over 10 years, 20? Over 10 years, we'll just go with that, because 20 would be over 10, so just take either one of those. For over 10 years, the same group of people have been going and running a swimming camp in one of the most impoverished counties in the United States, with one of the highest drowning rates in the United States, because it was a town full of people who couldn't swim who lived next to the Mississippi River. Ten years ago, people started going. 5 years ago, we started going. And we started teaching kids how to swim, which seems like maybe not the most. I mean, yes, there are Bible studies, and it is a whole package where there is Bible study, and there is caring, and there is food delivered, and there's tennis or golf taught or whatever Wes and Calvin want to teach that year. I don't know. But all I did when I went was stood in a pool with a bunch of kids. They looked nothing like me, came from nowhere I was, and taught them how to float. People have been doing that for 10 years, and now some of those kids who couldn't swim are coming back every summer to counsel and be a part of the leadership of something when they existed in a system that told them they would never amount to anything. And they could never be a leader. And now they are leaders. See, we get in this mindset where we go to fix people's problems. And that is not the way the world works. We can never go with the mindset to fix people's problems and it ever be a sustainable solution. What we can go and do is say that love exists in the world, that we believe it is bigger than what you face, and we have experienced it, and we are commanded, divinely shoved, to show up and share. And when we do, it becomes not about us, though we are transformed in the process. It becomes about God being glorified in new ways. There's one other thing I would say. I mean, I could talk about Haiti and how I still think about it a lot. But I do want to talk briefly just about how that works. I hope you will go to Tarrant County, Tarrant City. There's a Tarrant County, but that's in Dallas. We're not going there. I hope you will go to Tarrant. It's a great place to go and get your feet wet. I hope you will go to Arkansas, because somehow, I was going to make a joke about the miserable heat, but let me be honest with you. Because it is not a hard trip to make with a good group of people in a system that is set up to teach you, to teach us how to love without owning something. I hope one day that you'll get to go to Haiti or Slovakia. But if you can't go, you can still be a part. See, the great thing about the Samaritan is that he didn't go out of his way except to go to the inn. He was just walking and there was a person hurting. So the first thing he did was just notice. And then he provided the time and resources for the innkeeper to care for the man. Some of us simply are being called to provide the resources for care. But Wes is right about this. While some of us may be called in different ways, some to go, some to provide, some to pray, while some of us may be called in different ways, all of us are called. Amen.